Brunhilde. This is the famous wife of Sigebert I, who we're going to have all kinds of trouble with. You know, the battle between Brunhilde and Fredegund. This is going to get very confusing, so hang on, all right? Now, she was born around 543 A.D. in Toledo, Visigothic Spain, which is, of course, the capital of Visigothic Spain. She was the daughter of King Athangeld and Queen Goswintha. Her older sister was, of course, Galswintha. We'll get back. We talked about her before. At the age of 23, Brunhilde was married to King Sigebert I of Austrasia. She gave up her Arian religion for Roman Catholicism and in turn brought a very large dowry to Sigebert. This dowry is made up basically of towns. Dowry towns rather than piles of money. Of course, the feud breaks out between Brunhilde and Fredegunda when Brunhilde's sister, Galswintha, was murdered in her bed by someone in her husband's court. Of course, she'd been married to Chilperic I, so it's Chilperic I's court, probably either hired by Fredegund or what have you. And subsequently, after that, Chilperic I then marries Fredegunda. So it's war between the husbands forced upon them by the two wives. So it's Sigebert I versus Chilperic I. Well, Guntram of Burgundy tried to mediate the problem between the two queens. And you actually have the dowry towns of Bordeaux, Limoges, Cahors, Beren, and Bigorre given back by Chilperic to Brunhilde. But that didn't make her feel any better. She's still mad and will never forget the killing of her sister. And on the other hand, Chilperic is still interested in retaking those towns if the opportunity presents itself. So there's another attempt. This time it's the Bishop of Paris, Germanus, who brokered a very short peace between Brunhilde and Fredegund. Between 567 and 570, Brunhilde had three children by Sigebert. That kept her busy. Two daughters, Ingud and Chaucind, and of course one boy, Childebert. War, however, broke out again as Chilperic and Fredegunda's insatiable quest for land. So they attacked Sigebert. But Sigebert's victory, the offensive by Chilperic, has a very short-lived moment. Unfortunately, Sigebert's victory is going to be short-lived because he's assassinated by two people sent by Fredegund, and they assassinate him at Vitry. They actually use poison daggers. Not only are you stabbing the guy, you're making sure it goes through. They then captured Brunhilde and her son, Childebert, and imprisoned them for a time in the city of Rouen. Well, now it's time for husband number two. Brunhilde ends up marrying Chilperic's son by his first wife, Odovera, which is Merovich. He ended up falling in love with her while she was imprisoned at Rouen. His whole idea was, by marrying her, he hoped to help his chances of becoming king. But that's not going to happen, and of course you also have church problems because he's marrying his aunt. This is incest. Well, anyway, they were married at any rate, they're still married. Bishop Pretextus married them. Well, Chilperic I eventually just came in and took Merovich away back with him to Soissons. There he had him tonsured, cut all his hair off, and then sent him to Le Mans to become a priest. Merovich then managed to escape. He fled, but was unsuccessful in getting any help, and so eventually he had a servant kill him when his bid for power failed. Well, Brunhilde, not to be outdone here, she now tries the rule as the regent for her son, Childebert II. But the nobles aren't real wild about this, so she's forced to take protection at Guntram's court. And there she ruled as Queen of Austrasia. Now, she wasn't too bad. She repaired the old Roman roads. She built churches. She built abbeys. When you do a lot of bad things, this is how you make up for it as a noble. built a few fortifications, reorganized the royal treasury, reorganized the royal army. She convinced the heirless Guntram to adopt her son. So Childebert was adopted in 577 AD. Brunhilde's daughter Ingud was then married to Prince Hermenegild at the age of 13. Hermenegild was a Visigothic king, but she managed to convert him from Arian Christianity to Roman Catholicism, which precipitated a civil war in Visigothic Spain, resulting in the deaths of both Ingud and her husband. Brunhilde then ruled Austrasia until 583, when Childebert was old enough. At the age of 13, that's the minimum age under Merovingian rules in which you can become the ruler of a territory. So he becomes the ruler of Austrasia. Of course, you know, mom's kind of keeping an eye on it. Well, now we have the war between Brunhilde and Fredegund starting up again, particularly after the death of Fredegund's husband, Chilperic I. So Fredegund is now in the same position that Brunhilde was. She is the regent in Neustria for her son, Clothar. Now, Brunhilde's son, Childebert II, of course, was being run by mom, and mom is hated by the nobles. There are three nobles who attempt to kill them. Noble Rausching, Urseo, and Breathefrid. They plan to kill Childebert and hopefully Brunhilde. Fortunately for Childebert, the plot is discovered. And Brunhilde, Childebert, and Childebert's bastard son are then taken refuge in, once again, Guntram's court in Burgundy. Of course, eventually the three assassin nobles are found and they're executed. In 587, there is the signing of what is called the Pact of Andelot. It is an alliance between Burgundy and Austrasia as long as Guntram lives. And then Childebert II would inherit the kingdom of Burgundy when Guntram died. Good deal. In the same year, 587, the king of the Visigoths, Ricared I, offered an alliance to Austrasia and Burgundy. Well, Childebert and Brunhilde accepted. But for some reason, Guntram wasn't interested. And he actually then forbade the daughter of Brunhilde, Closend, to Ricared. Well, you know, what's going to happen is 5 years later, Guntram's going to die. And Childebert will then take over Burgundy. And then they'll kind of work out a deal with the Visigoths again. And, of course, once Childebert II takes over Burgundy, well, it's time to attack King Clothar of Neustria. 595, Childebert II dies. What we needed here is somebody to live a very long time, and it didn't happen. When Childebert II dies, Brunhilde tries to do what she did when Sigebert died, and that is to create a regency. This time, it's for her two grandsons, Theudebert II and Theuderic II. In 597, Fredegund dies, but the war between the heirs of Sigebert and Chilperic continue. The Franks are in purgatory here, trying to get a sole king. In 599, Theudebert II exiles his grandmother, but she eventually turns up at the other brother's court, Theuderic II, and he falls under her influence. Now we not only have a war between the heirs of Chilperic and Sigebert, we've got a civil war between Theudebert and Theuderic. Brunhilde conspired to kill Theuderic's mayor of the palace, actually killed him in 604. And then replaced him with her lover, a guy named Protadius. But Protadius doesn't live very long because he's murdered by his own men under orders of one of the powerful dukes, the Duke of Anceline. And now we have this little litany of death, all right? The Duke of Ancelin is then arrested, tortured, and executed. The Bishop of Vienna, or Vienne, a guy named Desiderius, the future Saint Diderot, accuses Brunhilde of public cruelty and incest. The bishop is then murdered in a village now called Saint Didier sur Chamaon. So, you know, she's not afraid to kill priests as well, which is why she gets a lot of bad press in history of the Franks by Gregory of Tours. And, of course, he's killed by three men sent by Brunhilde. In 612, Theuderic II defeated his brother at the Battle of Tolbiac and took the captured Theudibert II to Brunhilde. She then claimed that he was really the son of a gardener and not the son of, you know, the king. He was then put in a monastery, and eventually he was murdered, and his son, Merovich, another Merovich, is murdered. Now, Theuderic II has both kingdoms. So we're back to where we were when Childebert II took over after Guntram died. But you know, this is still not going to be too easy. In 613, 1 year after this all takes place, yeah, you got it, Theuderic II dies of dysentery in his capital of Metz. Well, what's left? Is there anybody left? Well, Brunhilde found somebody. She's going for her third regency. Theuderic II had a son, a little bastard son, named Sigebert. Could they have not picked a couple of other names? Who was a child at this time. Well, the nobles are just fed up with this, but they tried to keep the kid away from Brunhilde. But she once again weaseled her way in and took control, becoming regent. But this is it. This was the last straw. They'd had enough. So you have some nobles deserted both the boy and Brunhilde. And that would have been Warnakar. It would have been the mayor of the Palace of Burgundy, Rado, Pepin of Landen, who we'll get to later on, and the Bishop of Metz said, we're out of here. They went over to Clothar II. King of Neustria. Well, just prior to a battle between Sigebert and Clothar's forces, then we have three other nobles that are going to switch sides. Altibus, Rocco, and Sigvald. That forces Brunhilde and Sigebert to flee. They are chased down and caught near Lake Neuchâtel. Sigebert and his brother Corbo were then killed. Clothar II finally reunites the Frankish kingdom in 613. But what do we do with Brunhilde? They thought and they thought and they thought and they pondered and they puzzled and they thought, and they decided that they were going to execute her. Just how? The story that comes down to us is that she's first of all accused of her crimes, which probably took a while. To shorten them a little bit, she's accused of killing 10 kings. Not one. 10 kings. And, of course, a variety of churchmen, including Bishop Desiderius, who became Saint Didier. Okay, well, that's going to hurt you. So then they want to humiliate her a little bit. So the story goes she was put on a camel and led through the army, which then probably spit at her and taunted her and whatever. Then she was tied to the feet of several wild horses and then torn limb from limb. Now, that's bad enough. Actually, you can find online a couple of little woodcuts showing that, but she's not as young as in the picture. She appears to be this very young, good-looking woman. And if she was born in 540-something, she's going to be 60-some years old. But they weren't done with just killing her. They didn't want anything left over, so she does not have a grave. They burned her and burned her and burned her until there was nothing left. They burned her bones until they were completely ashes, and there was nothing left of her. And that's the end of Brunhilde. one of the most horrific periods in Frankish history, with the feud between Fredegund and Brunhilde, although Fredegund wins because it's her son who eventually becomes the sole ruler. But all of the butchery in between is just absolutely just unbelievable. Now, as far as sources for this, it's the same ones I've been using. We don't have a lot of choices here. Gregory of Tours, The History of the Franks. Of course, Wallace Hadrill's The Long-Haired Kings. The Merovingian Kingdoms, 450 to 751 by Ian Wood. And The Lives of the Kings and Queens of France by Duc de Castries. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and thank you very much.